Hello, dear friends. Welcome to the Principled Podcast. From the work we do with hundreds of school leaders around the globe, it is becoming clearer and clearer to us at Making Stuff Better that a new way of thinking is needed in order to meet the needs of a rapidly changing world. The challenge and opportunity for us at MSB is always this: how can we help leaders in schools develop new ways of thinking that align with the emergent reality of life in the 21st century? If we accept that a new way of thinking is needed, which we do, and that educators are pivotal in creating the conditions for change that are so needed in the world, then what are the implications for school leaders as they continue to grow learning communities that thrive? It's a big question. So for this second season, we're going to refine our quest and focus specifically on systemic and organizational health. What is it? What does it feel like? How do you create it? And what matters about it? And how might thinking from a systemic perspective help us in the challenges I've just outlined? We're not looking for a single answer. As Meg Wheatley rightly says, everyone in a complex system has a slightly different interpretation. The more interpretations we gather, the easier it becomes to gain a sense of the whole. So, gather interpretations we will. Join us in this second season where we will draw on wisdom of leaders from the worlds of ecology, systems thinking, poetry, dendrology, that's the study of trees, I had to look it up, and many, many more. This season is a series of journeys we will take to explore what organisational health means in a school in the 21st century. It's by me, Matt Hall, and my friend and colleague, Naomi Ward, powered by Making Stuff Better.
Hi, folks. We're here again for another Principled Podcast, and really excited this week to welcome to the podcast Padraig O'Tooma, who's a poet and theologian working across themes of language, power, conflict, religion. His work has won so much acclaim in poetry, politics, religion, psychotherapy, conflict analysis, and you may already be familiar with him. He presents Poetry Unbound with On Being, and slightly more downloads than us so far. I think up to 6 million downloads in its first three seasons. So I'm really chuffed that we're going to be speaking to Padraig today. And I'm starting to pick up this theme of systemic and organizational health from the perspective of a poet. Let's just think about where we're going to go with this, Naomi, before we talk to Padraig. What's coming up for you?
Well, you and I have always had poetry in common. I think it's an important part of what we read, and poetry is always something we come back to if we want to express something that's kind of beyond our means to express. No surprise that we have Padraig O'Tooma as a guest, because it feels like an important subject. But in the context of organizational health and systemic health, I think that poets have this ability to take a different vantage point, one that we all need to remember in service of the bigger picture and the parts of the system that we can forget when we're blinkered with the day-to-day to-do list. So I kind of have this image of the poet sort of standing slightly apart, slightly on the edge, with curiosity and wonder, kind of looking in and seeing things from all the different angles, never in judgment, always in kind of wonder and curiosity. And there's some parallel here that we haven't quite got our arms around between the vantage point of the poet and the vantage point of today and tomorrow's leader. And we're wondering what Padraig will have to say about this subject.
Yeah, lovely. I feel like we're bringing in a fairly unusual and maybe underutilized perspective when we think about systemic leadership and school leadership. And that really excites me because I don't quite know what to expect. But I also think I need to be fully transparent that this is just an act of beautiful self-indulgence for both of us, because we are both big fans of Padraig and of the potential that poetry has to kind of connect us with bits of ourselves and the systems we're working in that I haven't really found other mediums are able to do. With that in mind, I kind of, you know, offer an invitation, dear listener, that if already you're kind of slightly leaning out of your chair or pulling the headphones slightly out of your ears because your idea of poetry maybe is lost in some textbook in a school when you were put off it back in your GCSEs or O-levels, then yeah, I'm kind of inviting a curiosity of you, because this is going to be a really interesting conversation, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too.
Let's go.
Hadraig, welcome to the Principal Podcast. It's really lovely to have you.
Thanks very much. It's nice to be here.
Yeah. I want to dive straight in. We're exploring organizational health and what it means to create organizational health, and really deliberately asking you the poet's perspective on this topic. What does poetry offer us when it comes to thinking about organizational health?
Well, I suppose the primary thing is that a poem is a language event, and hopefully an unpredictable language event. There's a drinking game I used to play with some friends where we would read three lines of very predictable poetry and then have to come up with the filthiest fourth line, and then everybody would take a drink. Everybody wins. And that was a kind of a play on bad poetry. So what you're hoping for in poetry is something that has the unexpected turn, like Emily Dickinson, when she's writing about the soul, speaks about the soul and says, "She dances like a bomb abroad." There's an arresting experience in the language there, like a bomb. You know, who in 1860s and what woman in 1860s was using bomb like a metaphor? Lots, probably, but we have the record of her. And so what you're looking for in organizational health is the capacity for language that's surprising and necessary and arresting and interesting at all levels, not just, you know, the person who's in charge, but also the newest person in, so that something interesting can happen in language.
That takes me to what a poet might seek to do, which is to break entrancement, that we can get stuck.
What's the word? Entrancement?
Yes.
I don't know that one.
I heard Ada Limón talk about creating and then breaking entrancement. And
like a trance? Like,
yes.
Being in a trance. Okay. Yeah, that's what I would have guessed, but I don't think I'd quite heard of it put like that. Maybe it's an Americanism.
Yeah. But I wonder if we sometimes need that for organizations to be healthy, to be surprised or pointed in a different direction.
Yeah. Well, I mean, organizations are fundamentally interested in their own advancement and continuation. You know, you set up an organization for a purpose, but then a secondary purpose becomes the continuation of the organization. And I think within the context of that, therefore, there's always going to be the need for the critical eye. And always going to be the need for the critical question. Somebody who can say, why do we do this? I know we have done it, or I know we say we do it, but why do we do this? And for what purpose? Why do we need three meetings when we could have one? Are we communicating externally our internal complexity? Are we making our doors difficult to get through because we like to think that we're complicated? All of these questions. And I think it isn't necessarily that organizations need poetry. What organizations need is courage. And what I hope poetry can be amidst many of the human arts is courageous. Courage coming from the word for heart, which is a mix then of great intelligence, an engagement with the psyche, innovation, intuition, and risk.
I'm curious about how, can you just expand on that slightly for us, like how poetry might give us courage or can?
Well, I'm not sure. I'm always a bit cautious about thinking about what art should or shouldn't do. Art is in control of itself. And I mean, you can write a poem with a purpose, but that's just a little tract that rhymes. I'm always interested in a poem that undoes us, as, and by us, I mean the poet too. I'm interested in art that is strange to itself. And so for me, the real question about organizational health is not about how organizations can use poetry, but how it is that a moment of courage and risk can be used for an organization or a poet or an artist to examine themselves, to take a risk. So for me, the pursuit in what we're talking about here, for me, the pursuit really is the question of courage and what it can mean. You know, I mean, I am a poet, and these days I work fairly full time as a working artist. But for many years, I worked in conflict resolutions and worked in and out of organizations. So I suppose I have an interest in poetry as well as an interest in organizational health, as well as a recognition of the violence of human systems. And all of those things interest me.
It's interesting that, because I my personal experience is I find, maybe I'm answering my own question, but I have found poetry to be a really effective tool when I think about organizations I've been at. I know you're saying it's not its purpose.
Where have you seen it be effective? I mean, I believe you. I'd just love to hear the story.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting one. I'm reflecting on it. It's been really useful for me to access thinking about organization and systemic health that I've been involved in But I guess as I say it out loud, I'm kind of challenging myself as, have I used it as a tool, for want of a much better word, with those systems?
Mm. Yeah, that's okay to do it. I mean, everything is used as a tool in that way. I suppose I'm always just, one of the things that the worry can be is to think, okay, great, poetry can be used as a tool. Let me find the book that can give me the poems that I can use as a tool. Yes. There, great. Yes. There's 10 lesson plans. Boom, go.
We'll read it at the assembly. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. To read at the assembly and somebody's written out a script. And I understand people are busy, and so you're looking for something. And the question for me when it comes to art is, well, who's reading poetry anyway? And do they have something that to say, I can't stop thinking about this, and here's why? That is a much more interesting poetry event for me, rather than how can I find a thing that's going to say the thing that I want to say? Because the likelihood is even if you think that it's landing, actually other people will hear it in different ways anyway. That is the joy of art, is that art has a certain anarchy at the heart of it. It will do what it wishes to do. There's a book called Story Theology by theologian Terence Tilley. And it's a basic introduction to using literary analysis for looking at religious text. And he has this extraordinary line in the middle of his book, the author of a story cannot control a story's power to reveal. And I think that is so true. The artist cannot control the power of the art to reveal. And that's also true for somebody who's reading a poem at the front of an assembly. What you think is going to be revealed might not be what's revealed. And that's the brilliance of it. And so therefore, I'm always interested in thinking, well, what are the poems that are undoing us rather than the poems that can be useful?
Yeah, the poems that are undoing us. Yeah, I love that. I love that word undoing. And there's we talk about this at Making Stuff Better, like trying to find a new language for what's needed. And like you say, a poem create something that you can't possibly predict.
Yeah, that's the hope.
Yeah. And so there's something, is there a connection here towards being at peace with that as much as possible? Like you can't possibly predict what's here. And how can we be in a healthy, right relationship with that?
I mean, to think about this organizationally, like organizations are a constant, complicated battle between control and innovation. You know, you want staff meetings and you want, you know, you want output and you want product or whatever it is the organization is set up to do. You want it to be able to do its work and you want systems that serve that. Great. You know, and you also want enough innovation and creativity and courage that when it is that the system is serving itself and actually punishing people, that there can be enough radical and critical thinking to think, my God, we're serving ourselves. And we have put five meetings where we don't need five meetings. It's keeping people feeling busy and it's keeping people feeling important, but actually it's just getting in the way of good work. And so in the context of that, what you therefore are always looking for is a mixture between control and the uncontrollable. And that is one of the things that a poem is, because a poem, whether it's formally in form with rhyme or whether it's free verse, a poem is always a complicated engagement between structure and madness. And that, in a certain sense, is all human community, whether that's formally in employment or whether that's outside of employment, in families or in friendship groups, a mixture between what is controllable and what is unpredictable. And I think what we're looking for in if I'm to bring something about poetry is to recognize that a poem just reflects that the same way that an organization reflects it. And hopefully what we have in a poem is, because it's just a poem, is somebody who can surrender to a little bit of the unpredictable and find out what happens when you allow yourself to follow that. When you think about this in the context of schools, my guess is, and I have done lots of work in schools over the last almost 30 years now, I think if you were to ask a teacher at the end of the year or a head teacher, what's a moment that you remember in a class this year, a moment of learning, that they are possibly unlikely to say, it's when we taught quadratic equations and the lesson plan went beautifully. It's likely when they say, something happened and actually I was able to seize the moment, or one of the pupils seized the moment, or the teaching assistant or the cleaner, or something happened. And what we had to do was to turn our attention to it. And there's the mixture of the muscle of brilliance that teachers bring, which is attention to the class, and the innovation to think, let's go with this and see that even though this is unpredictable, the quadratic equations can wait, the examination preparation can wait, something important is happening here. And that, I think, is part of the intuition behind a poem as well, which is to say something important is happening and I can't control it. What I need to do is to notice it. And in noticing, something might be revealed back to me.
I sense that would really resonate with many of our listeners and folk that we work with, that balance, that tension between structure and innovation, control and innovation, accountability and creativity, a plan and not a plan. And I feel like that so many of our colleagues are kind of walking that balance.
And I, with great respect, you know, it's a complicated thing to know that ultimately what you're trying to do is to teach how to learn. And often people are working in a system that wants people to learn how to pass an exam. And so many teachers are holding that together and doing all the extra work, unpaid work in their own time to find ways to A, help their pupils pass exams, and B, help their pupils to, once they've finished the exams and gotten onto where they are, to also feel like they have some equipment for living.
And that's where the courage lives, right?
I think so. And the innovation lives in finding ways where that can be bridged. Like, for instance, at one point, like, you know, I've worked in Belfast for the last 20 years. And Belfast, as a result of British presence, I suppose, and then the complicated things that have happened in the last 102 years since Ireland was partitioned by the British, there are these things called peace walls across Belfast, peace walls that divide communities of people. People on one side will primarily wish to maintain partition and identify as British, and people on the other side will say that the partition of Ireland was wrong and that they would wish Ireland to be reunited. Those are broad generalizations. And so I worked with teachers to think, what would it be like to try to look at some of those social dynamics through various ways within which pupils can learn skills, but also learn thinking. And so we looked at statistical analyses for teaching mathematics through then looking at the experience of people on one side or the other side of some of these so-called peace walls. We sourced articles in French or Spanish, which tended to be the two major foreign languages that are taught in Ireland, English being another foreign language in Ireland, of course. And we sourced articles in French and Spanish that looked at those analyses of those so that young people were learning vocabulary in French and Spanish, but also getting an experience of point of view as well about the how it is that people who aren't from a particular place might view or describe a particular place. And this, I suppose, is ways within which I see teachers all over the place, not just fulfilling the curricula, but going far beyond that. And I think it isn't just in schools. A friend of mine used to run a warehouse in a place a little bit like IKEA. It wasn't IKEA, but a place like that. Just because he was bored, he used to set a question of the day every day. He'd say, okay, today the question is, should you always tell the truth? Go. And throughout the day, you know, as people would be loading up vans and trucks and this and that, there'll be this return to the question of the day. You know, and some of them were like, I hate your question of the day. But so much happened in that experience. And one day I walked in, this is years ago, this is 20 years ago, before so much gay visibility was there. One day I walked in and said hello to him and had a cup of tea during his coffee break. And when I left, he said, okay, new question of the day. Are you a homophobe? And he said, that's my friend Padraig. He's gay. And I had to learn a lot about having a gay friend when he came out. What about you? And they're doing their job, but their job's going faster because they're also having a human experience. Like that's the kind of brilliance that I know people who listen to your podcast and people who are involved in organizational leadership in and outside of schools, people are doing that all the time.
Yeah, it strikes me that it's leaving space for the magic and the unpredictable and kind of curating that. And I think if you were to ask any teacher, you know, tell me a story about the moment that meant the most for you. I mean, I'm straight at that boy in that classroom that had that realization. It something happened and it was amazing. And that's what in the warehouse, again, is forging those human connections is the seed of healthy organization, surely. Those, yeah.
And it seems like it's extra work, but actually it makes everything better. And hours go by much faster. when you're having fun. I mean, it's a very basic principle of play, but you put the effort in order that you can find something of great enjoyment, and the other work gets done too.
I'm kind of curious just to explore this strand just slightly more in the words you use there, which I love, having, you know, how do we have a human experience? How do we have more human experience? I think a lot of people running schools at the moment are finding that the wider system, the system beyond the organization, if you like, is threatening that. You know, that's certainly how it feels to me. Like that there's a real, like that's harder to create in schools because of the external demands. And yes, curriculum and exams are one of them, but also is kind of changing relationships with parent communities. Obviously the rise of kids using smartphones and social media, like all the stuff that we could kind of list that makes us feel less human. I'm curious about your perspective on where the, I don't want to ask you for the answer. There isn't an answer, but yeah, I'm just curious on your perspective, Padraig, on that.
My first perspective is, you know, I have deep respect for everybody who's trying to hold that. And my guess is that everybody who's doing it is already using extraordinary innovation and thinking about it at the weekend and in the middle of the night when they wake up, and that they're already doing it. And I have deep admiration for the work that they do. And admiration not only for the moments of huge innovation, but also for the moments where you think, I've got this great idea, and you go into the glass and it falls flat on its face. or other days when you just go in and think, I just have to get through the day. It's just too much today. I can't be doing the innovation. Like all of those and the other experiences too. I have respect for the demand on anybody who, whether as a head teacher or a teaching assistant or a teacher in a class, that they are trying to get through. And, you know, somebody's asking, you know, what's the point of this? And all of those kinds of experiences. And you're getting all the complicated experiences of being in a class where people probably don't have the choice whether they're there or not. You know, they're mandated to be there because their society calls for the society to educate children, so, or young people. So my first response is of deep respect, and that I think people are already doing it. One of the things about the idea of a system, though, is that everybody feels like they're in the system. I did a poetry project for a few years working with people, primarily men, although not exclusively, who had been in the criminal justice system in Scotland. So they'd all served custodial sentences in prison. And of course, when you're in prison and when you're waiting to get out of prison, whether you've been serving 3 years or 23 years, you know, there's lots of talk about the system. You're caught up in the system, you're in the system, etc. And then even when you leave the system, you're still in the system because you might have a probation officer, or there might be demands on you in terms of employment or all of the various things that people can have as a license agreement. One of the things I worked with this arts organization called Vox Liminis, Voices on the Margins. And one of the things that they did in the context of this 3-year writing project was not only to have people who had been serving a custodial sentence, but there was also social workers and employers and police and probation workers, etc., involved in some of the conversations from which some poems came. And what was interesting was that, like, people who'd been imprisoned wrote poems about the system. And what was fascinating was then to say to people who were social workers, can you write a poem about the system, and how they mirrored each other? So many people each validly saw each other as the monstrous face of the system. And the system, in a certain sense, seems to be a little bit like the Wizard of Oz. It thrives on the belief that's put into it. And at every state of the system, people were wishing that somebody else would change the system. And people were blaming someone else for being the face of the system. And that interests me in terms of the question of, well, therefore, what is it that's stopping us in terms of innovation? And who is really going to get in the way? I am not proposing this as any kind of solution. I am proposing it as a criticism I have of myself whenever it is that I'm speaking about the system, to think, well, how is that a certain kind of model obstacle that I'm putting in the way of me acting with courage or saying something that I think might be true?
Yeah, I think that will really resonate with our listeners, this idea that, or maybe this feeling, actually, that the system is against us and I'm only a small part of it, and therefore I can't do the stuff that I really want to do in my school. So much good stuff I want to get to, and yet I can't get there because this other stuff is demanding my time and my attention and my compliance. And yeah, to that point you just made, like, to what extent is that really true? Sounds like you've seen that in your work as well.
Yeah, I have. I mean, it is both true and not true. there are systems that are really annoying and systems that are oppressive, you know, so I'm not a kind of a fantasist thinking if you think it is, will happen. Even in the situation where you are working against a system, well, then there's the option to say, well, do I want to stay or do I want to do something interesting? Or do I just need to get through because actually I have other priorities in my life? And so in the context of all of these, what I think might be possible is even a fraction of courage. And the courage might be to say, oh, I'm going to work within the system because actually, do you know what? This is salary and I can do interesting things in my time off with the salary. Great. That's a courageous way to respond if you want. Or you might go, I'd love to make 10 huge changes in my organization. But here's the thing, even if you were in charge of it, I've been in charge of organizations, and if I wanted to make 10 huge changes in a year, I would only get to try to make one or two of those adequately during that year. So the fantasy that you'd be able to change the entire thing is often a way of doing nothing. And so the question might be, well, which is the one that I want to do, or the two? And it's worthwhile trying in the context of that. And I say that knowing that whoever's listening is already trying. I don't think I'm saying anything new. Like, to think about this from the point of view of being an artist, I know that for some people, and certainly for me too, like when you're an artist, you're hoping maybe I can get published in this place or published in that place or get noticed in this way. And this is often a misguided question in myself about the idea about what is it that gives value to art. Nobody really is going to make a living from being a poet. And so therefore the question is can I write poems that I'm proud of? And poems that whether or not it's got a wide readership or just a small loyal readership, that I feel like I can look at those and be glad at, and then get on with the business of living as well and paying attention. And there's a pragmatism to all of this that I think is really worthwhile paying attention to. And sometimes the fantasy of a huge audience, the fantasy of enormous change within the organization, those fantasies become what René Girard called the model obstacle. You've got this extraordinary imagination of something that prevents you from doing the very thing that you say you wish to do.
Yeah, I've seen that time and time again, and it strikes a chord with me on a personal level, almost becoming the size of your dreams becoming the perfect excuse not to achieve them.
And something that strikes me is, you know, actually the changes that we make don't have to be huge, going back to just the quality we create in a human encounter. So many of the poems that you curate on your podcast are really about that, and then maybe that undoing that we experience of just trying to hold back from connection. So for me, that's so meaningful. In a school, it's all about human connection. That can send ripples, can't it? That creates change, that is really important.
Yeah. I mean, you say connection. I'm going to go with something that rhymes just because I like rhyme. But I think something can be made in those moments. A poem from the Greek poemia means a made thing. But something can also be unmade. And it's both of those fascinating experiences that are absolutely enlivening. You know what it's like when you're in a situation where you realize, my God, what I thought was true up until now is not so true. I've learned something new. It's electric. When something new strikes you, even if you were tired, you can suddenly feel awake. It's a great Russian word from Russian literature. Ostranyenie, defamiliarization, is what that's often translated as into English. But I met a guy in the Eagle gay bar in New York City years ago. He was an Irish fella and a translator for the UN from English. English, French, and Russian. So I said to him, how would you tell me that the etymology and the kind of what the actual word ostranyenie, how would you put that into English? And he said, other countryization. And he said, it's a little bit like in the place that you think has been motherland, something happens and you see it in a new way for the first time, which is both fascinating because you can see something that's there and disconcerting. And so in that way, I think shocking or surprising or courageous or poetic moments that happen in an organization can make and unmake you. They are new and surprising and shocking and fascinating all at the same time. And they do call for innovation and courage, and for the leaders and a capacity to hold people as you explore, to say, we don't know what this is going to be, and I have a plan. both things at the same time, which isn't the plan to quell or diminish it, but it is a plan to say, let's learn together. Let's ask some interesting questions. Let's flex the muscles that we know are the things that we say might be our core values as an organization. You know, so many organizations have that little band on their website. I find most of them really predictable and boring. I'm really interested in ones where you go, I would rely on those in a time when something shocking happens in an organization. And that is the making and the unmaking, the connecting and the disconnecting, because that is where something surprising and fascinating happens.
Thank you, Patrick.
My pleasure.
I really enjoyed the conversation and the here's to more poetic moments in organizations.
Well, of course, everybody knows they're happening all the time.
Go well. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
It's a pleasure.
Plenty to reflect on there, wasn't there, Naomi?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, everything Pedreg offered us there was so rich. Yeah, I think what's landing for both of us is that dance, that necessary dance between structure, systems, and freedom, getting that balance right to allow the moments of magic, the poetic moments, to emerge and then follow them while also keeping the structure. Yeah, it's a real dance.
It's a real, and it really typifies for me, I think, you know, our experience of working with school leaders in particular, that I see that tension all the time. And the desire is always to the innovation, right? The desire is always to the creative. It's always a pull away from the system and a pull away from the control. But sometimes there's a block, and either the block is, as Padre kind of identified, is self-created. It's a perception, the system won't allow me, or, you know, there's a whole lot of reasons why. Or I love that kind of model up school. Or I've created a, it's only worth doing if it's enormous and we revolutionize what we do. And if we can't do that, then there's no point doing anything. But my observation is, and I find it really useful, is that we're always living in that tension. And I think it's really true of leadership. I also just think it's a really good example of one of the tensions in being human, is that we're looking for the safety, the security of structure, but we also want the freedom to explore and to feel different about the world and be new and not be the person we were before. And it's interesting how that, I think that shows up so often when we're coaching. You kind of got that very personal tension, and then you've got that like systemic tension, like me as a person and then me as a leader. We're kind of living between those two places, I think.
For us, exploring organizational health this season, I think we've hit on something really at the core of this, that we need those two things to be in balance. And sometimes in schools, necessarily, because the outputs are so tangible and we're accountable to them, it's the freedom part that we don't know how to be with as much. And I love what he was saying about your job as a leader is to, or anyone, is to notice them, put our attention to them, what's happening here, and to kind of be permeable to that. So I think he's ignited a theme here that I'm sure we'll come back to in that balance.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And actually the fact that both are needed, right? It's the relationship between comfort zone and stretch zone and discomfort zone. And actually none of us want to be in that outer circle. Something, you know, too much freedom, too much space, it's terrifying. But actually we want the structure, we want the system, we want the component parts to hold us together. But we don't like it when we feel trapped by them, either because we are or because we perceive that we are. So there's loads more to explore in this, isn't there?
Yeah, and coming to the role of the leader, to how do you hold that space for people to feel safe enough and free enough to do really wonderful work and find those magical moments. And there's a poem that we'll point you to which exemplifies this, and we'll put it in the show notes. It's called The Rungs by Benjamin Jacquiardi, and it is an educator working with young people, and it really beautifully illustrates how to hold both. So I encourage you to read that and see what it undoes in you.
Yeah, I love that poem. And I'm a first member of hearing it on, actually, this is the right time. Let's just point to where people can find out more about Padraig. So really strongly recommend, as we said in the beginning, Poetry Unbound, which is part of On Being. Oh, it's just a brilliant, brilliant podcast with Padraig unpicks and explores different poems in each episode. And obviously you can go to Padraig's website and find out more about the work that he does. Everything you need to know will be in the show notes. Thanks so much, dear listener. It's been a great, great conversation and looking forward to many more.
Thank you for coming along with us on this principled journey. To learn more about making stuff better and how we can help you and leaders in your school, please do get in touch through hello@makingstuffbetter.com. Alternatively, you can find us in all the usual places like LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook. Links are in the show notes below. And don't forget to subscribe, and if you can, leave us a review. That's all for now. See you next time.